Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to a very special show we have for you here on this Friday on Suspense Radio. I am your host, John Robb, and tonight we are going to do something a little bit different. We are having this as debut new author show tonight. We are going to have three guests for you on. The first one is going to be Grant Jerkins, who's going to be talking about his book, Very Simple Crime. Second, we are going to have Regia Shilkin on talking about You Know When. And we're going to finish it with Derek Muck talking about The Occult Files of Albert Taylor. Three very different authors on. We think you're really going to enjoy this. So I want everyone to sit back, relax, and enjoy, because 60 Minutes of Suspense Radio begins right now. And everybody here on a great Friday night we have on Suspense Radio. I wanted to apologize for yesterday. We were supposed to have a one-on-one 30-minute interview with John Saul, and we had some technical difficulties, and we could not get that done. But we did talk to John, and we are going to have him on as soon as possible, so we will definitely let you know when it's going to happen. John was very gracious and said whenever he's ready, because he's hanging out in Hawaii right now anyway, just sitting there and enjoying the fact that House of Reckoning is now in paperback. Did you hear Tuesday's show? Because Tuesday's show was one of the best that we've had on here on Suspense Radio. We were able to get a hold of, and I'll tell you that this was not an easy feat, of numerous best-selling author, Patricia Cornwell. We had on talking about her latest book, Port Mortuary, which is her 18th in her Kay Scarpetta novel. And we also had on Michelle Gagan talking about her book, Kidnap and Ransom. And it was her fourth book in the series that she had, and the different things that she's going to try with her next book. So there's a lot of fun things that we have going on here on Suspense Radio. We have a lot of exciting authors that are definitely coming up. Brad Thor is another one that's going to be on the radio show. Excuse me, I have to have my cactus cooler. And C.S. Graham is going to be coming on. We are going to, like I said, bring back John Saul. We are going to still try to get on Clive Cussler as soon as I can nail that down, because he had a book that came out. One of the biggest things that we've had is we were told that we are going to be able to possibly get, and I believe it's, you know, we don't have a date, but we're looking very good to be able to have, you know, one of the ultimate masters, Stephen King, coming on here in February. We are also going to call and see if we can try to get Dean Koontz on the radio. And I've been practicing, I've been, you know, really trying to try to get this person on, and I haven't had much success. So if anybody out there can help me, I've been trying to get John Grisham to come on the radio. For some reason, I just can't get a hold of the right publicist, or maybe he's just not doing radio shows, so it's very difficult to see if I can get John Grisham on, but I'd love to talk about his book that came out, The Confession. So there's a lot of great things that we have going on here. One of the other ones is that if you didn't know, go to your bookstores now, especially Barnes & Noble. We are still trying to get Borders to get the magazine all in stock. But our magazine here for December, which is our best of 2010 list, and it is out now in stores, and you can get it at Barnes & Noble. We were just told also that we are going to be an extensive, and I don't know how this happened, but we just received massive orders for our January issue to be in Canada, which, I mean, they're just going crazy for, you know, our suspense, mystery, thriller, horror genre magazine that we have out, which is great. So anybody listening in Canada, you're going to pick it up at many stores that they have going on there. Big bookstore chain all across Canada, drugstores, grocery stores, all over the place. If your bookstore does not carry it and you want them to carry it, all you have to do is send us a note, tell us who it is, and we will contact them and tell them where they can find it at, so it will be on the shelves for you to be able to get. But you can also order directly from us. We will ship it right to you. If you want to get it faster that way, you can still get subscriptions. We love to have those. We'll ship it right to you. You'll be able to get it right on, you know, either electronically or print, whichever you prefer. And you'll be able to check out, because we had another great issue in January. We're having Stuart Woods. We are having Jeffrey Deaver in the magazine. So February, we have some great authors lined up, which is our romantic suspense month. And I know that Tasha Alexander is going to be in that. I know that Jane Ann Krantz, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. I know she is going to be in the magazine, along with, you know, a bunch of others. So we are really reaching out to a bunch of authors to get them, you know, in the magazine, especially the best-selling ones. But the one thing that we always try to do is we love to have, you know, new debut, or what we kind of call lesser-known authors, the authors that their publishers don't pay, you know, the big bucks for, to have them out there on the front table of Barnes & Noble, which, if you, a lot of people did not know, that, you know, Barnes & Noble charges publishers to put those books on those front tables. Barnes & Noble's not saying that those are the best books to read. They're saying that they got the most money to put them out. And the one thing that everybody should do is to go to the stacks and go find great authors. And like we have one on here tonight, his name is Grant Jerkins, and his book is A Very Simple Crime. And I want to thank Grant for coming on the radio show tonight. So, Grant, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty doggone good, and I'm thanking you for having me. Wow, what a list of talent that you've had on and that you've got coming on. I'm amazed. You know, that's awesome.
Yeah, we've been very lucky, and I think it's just a lot of popularity because, you know, there's not a lot of shows for authors like yourself to go out, market your book, and get yourself known. And I think you could say that's borderline criminal, which is what you write about.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. You're talking about the Barnes & Noble, and the publishers do pay, you know, to have their books at the front of the store and set up on the tables and faced out on the shelves. And, you know, there's a freeway, too, a freeway that you can do that. What I do, I just go in, and if there's three books of mine in the store, I'll grab all three of them and put them on a table. So you can do that, too. It's kind of low-key.
Yeah, I mean, what can you do us a favor here, and why don't you tell everybody your book here, A Very Simple Crime.
Uh-huh.
Let people know, you know, exactly, you know, what it is about your character, setting it up, you know, the whole, you know, you're with Penguin Berkeley, so that's great.
Yeah, I'm very happy to be with Penguin Berkeley. Of course, you know, Penguin is part of Pearson. They're the largest publisher in the world, so it's kind of odd for me to be in this position where I'm with a big publisher, because it took me 12 years to find someone that was willing to publish this book. For years and years and years, I've been through three literary agents, and through those agents, virtually every publisher in New York and around the world has said no to this book. And the reason was, it all kind of boiled down to the same reason, which was they felt that there wasn't a character to root for mm-hmm. in the novel. You know, the traditional hero was kind of missing from the equation, so they felt that they didn't want to put their name behind a book where there wasn't a traditional hero that you could root for and love and all those kind of traditional things. How I ended up with being with Berkeley, I don't know. I mean, a great editor, her name is Natalie Rosenstein, she liked the book and was willing to take a chance on it. I'm delighted that I'm here today, that to have an actual physical book after 12 years of trying to get it published, that there's an actual physical book in my hands. Talking about no character to root for, the story, it's about a man named Adam Lee, who is, when the book opens, he's on trial. He's been accused of murdering his wife. And, of course, the nut of the novel is, did he do it or did he not do it? And so we get to know him, and we get to know, his wife, who suffers from mental illness and has had suicide attempts throughout her life. And they've had a son named Albert who has been institutionalized. He has a significant developmental disability, profound mental retardation. And, they've tried to raise him on their own, but ultimately had him institutionalized. And you just kind of get to know them and try to, it's just like any mystery, who did it? So, you get to the end of the novel and you find out, how Rachel Lee died. Did her husband do it or did somebody else do it? It appears that the son may have done it, so... That's kind of in a nutshell. That's what the book is about.
And so 12 years, I guess you want to say almost 12 years in the making. Did when you have that, because what I want people to understand from, you taking so long was this, is that 12 years in the making, how often did you now have to go back and change the book and maybe update it to make it a little bit more, relevant as compared to maybe 12 years, or did you have to at all?
I like that question, because I had not looked at the manuscript in probably 6 years. I got the new agent, sent it out to Berkeley, and it sold. And I had been down that road so many times, I wasn't expecting it to sell when it finally did. So after it sold, and we got to the editing stage, and I got the page proofs to edit, I had not looked at the book in probably 6 or 7 years, and a lot had changed. And the thing that jumps to my mind immediately is cigarette smoking. As a society, we have we've come together to stamp out cigarette smoking. And when I wrote the book, that was true to a degree, but people are kind of constantly sneaking cigarettes in their offices, and they hide ashtrays in their desk, and we're talking about it at the public defender's office and judges and places like that. So it was so prevalent in the novel, the smoking, that there was no way I could completely address all of it. So to me, that's kind of the one anachronism that kind of slipped through the process that I wasn't quite able to deal with. But as far as the cell phones and computers and handheld devices and all of that, none of that is in there, but it doesn't seem to be missing. So really the only anachronism that I found was with the cigarette smoking. So that's okay. I like that question.
So now let people go here. Let's kind of walk, a little bit of this journey, this little 12 years that you had mm-hmm. So people that are out there, because we always have a lot of inspiring authors that listen to the show because they love to hear the bestsellers, but they've been around for 15, 20 years and things have changed so much. Mm-hmm. But now you've just got it. So to kind of take people along your journey now to say, how was it different when you started 12 years ago to all of a sudden, you know, you being picked up by Penguin and Berkeley, what would you kind of tell them to do? Because, you know, 12 years is a long time, and 95% of the people would have given up.
Well, and you know, I'm part of that 95%. I did give up. I gave up, you know, 100 times, you know, over the years. But luckily, I always had always kind of had a stick still in the fire somewhere that would kind of flame up, and so there would be interest and something that would encourage me. But even having said that, that there were times that I did give up. Never give up. That's the key. Once you give up and you don't pursue it anymore, then it's kind of like buying a lottery ticket. You know, if you don't buy one, then there's no way you'll ever win. It's just not possible if you don't buy one. So you gotta kind of keep trying. I don't know what changed in the 12 years. Yeah, you know, I entered a contest. It's called the Writers Network Screenplay and Fiction Competition, and I actually won that. And this was about 10 years ago. I won the fiction category, and it was almost like a fellowship in that they took the manuscript and they submitted it to publishers and agents and places like that for me to try to get it published. And even with winning that contest, you know, and them trying to do that for me, I was still getting no's, you know, it's just not something that we can get behind. It's too dark. There's no one to root for, you know, good luck. And then kind of after the contest was over, the woman that runs the contest, her name is Audrey Kelly, she got the manuscript to a screenwriter, Nicholas Kazan, who responded to the manuscript, to the story. He really liked it. He wrote a screenplay on spec and got the screenplay to Barbe Schroeder, the director, and they had actually worked together on Reversal of Fortune, the Oscar-nominated film. So at that point, I thought, okay, well, no publisher's going to turn it down now. I got a film deal, you know?
Right.
But then I was wrong. So they still kept turning it down. They just felt it was too dark. And even with the film, you know, they're still having trouble kind of getting the financial backing for the film. Even with a great screenplay and a great director, and they're, at one point, Adrian Brody, you know, was attached to star in the film.
Good name.
Yeah. Right, exactly. You think, well, how, you know, that's it, I've made it, you know. But no, it just didn't quite work out. I always think of Clint Eastwood, you know, the film Million Dollar Baby.
Right.
You know, he had a great screenplay, and he was going to studio saying, I got this screenplay, I'm going to direct the film, I'm going to star in the film. And they were still telling him no. He had a lot of trouble getting that film produced. And the reason why is, it's so old now, I don't think I'm giving away anything, you know, but the main character commits suicide. So it was a downer of an ending. So no one wanted to put their money into a film with a downer of an ending. And so it's kind of the same thing with my story. It's not an upbeat story. It's very noir. It's almost like the kind of stories that were more prevalent in the 30s and the 40s with Postman Always Rings Twice, Double Indemnity, Nightmare Alley, things like that. So it's always just kind of been the darkness of the material that has given people pause as far as putting, you know, money behind it and investing in it. So you just got to keep trying until you find that one person that believes. And for me, that one person, you know, was Natalie Rosenstein, my editor at Berkeley, who said, you know, let's do this. And I've gotten a lot of great reviews. The Washington Post, you know, reviewed this book, and, you know, a book.
There you go.
Yeah, I couldn't give this book away for 12 years, and then all of a sudden, the Washington Post is taking note of it, and, you know, and saying, you know, there's something here, there's something about this book you should look at. So,
right,
keep trying, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I wrote down. I just did an interview with somebody, and they asked me, you know, what I would tell, and you know, what I would tell young or aspiring writers basically is, you know, keep writing, because I think that way too many people stop writing before they should. And I think there's a lot of authors out there that should stop writing and they keep putting out crap. But that's beside the point. But I think too many people stop writing too early because I think they give up on it.
That was probably one of my mistakes was I should have pushed ahead into another novel. Actually kind of started working on screenplays, and, you know, I was doing different things. I was still writing, but if I could go back in time and do it differently, I would have gone ahead and written a second novel, because you do grow so much and you get better as you push forward. But getting this published was such encouragement for me that, you know, that I did go ahead and, you know, write a second novel. So,
well, the good thing is that, you know, now that you're kind of, well, here, it's kind of a good thing, but I think it's kind of a bad thing almost. But now that you're in the business,
mm-hmm.
I think you're kind of seeing the darker side of the business, where people that were not in it and always aspiring, there's so many times that we always hear authors say, oh, well, once I get my book published, I'm good, I'm golden. Well, the fun, and see, you laugh because you know, like I know, no, now the fun has just begun. And kind of let them know, as far as, you know, what kind of things your publisher's doing to help you out, but dispel some of those myths that you maybe thought going in that were going to happen that are not really true.
Okay, I like that one too. There's you know, this sort of feeling that, you know, getting your book published is sort of equivalent to the golden ticket in a Willy Wonka chocolate bar. And of course that is not the case at all. It is not the road to instant riches or instant fame. In fact, it's funny that friends and family members just sort of make an assumption that you've paid off your mortgage and
mm-hmm.
you know, your life is set now, and they just hear novel published and everyone just equates that with the Grishams and the Kings and the Kuntzes, and they don't realize that there's, what, 400,000 books published in North America each year, and that less than 1% of those books, you know, end up as on bestseller lists. So,
well, less than 1% of authors, I think, can actually live off of just writing alone.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah,
so.
I would venture to say, maybe worldwide or U.S. wide, that it's probably maybe a little higher. Maybe it just depends on how you want to live. But yeah, you're not going to get the $35 million deals like Janet Ivanovich, you know, for a Stephanie Plum character after you've already written 18 books on the same character. I don't quite get that one, but that's just, to me, that's kind of given, you know, Kobe Bryant, when he's 50 years old, $100 million contract to keep playing basketball.
Yeah.
Well, he can't do it anymore. You know, he's past his prime, I guess you want to say. So you want to give, I would much rather have seen publishers put work or put money towards, you know, books like yours and books like newer and, you know, debut authors to get them out more into the hands of people, to open up people's minds to read more authors.
No, I agree, and that's why, you know, I do have to give credit, you know, to Berkeley, you know, for publishing this book, because it's under the Prime Crime imprint, and they publish almost exclusively cozies with, you know,
yeah,
titles like Roast Mortem, and, you know, they all have, you know, some kind of little funny pun. There's nothing wrong with cozies at all, but, you know, they really went out on a limb. I mean, my book is kind of an anti-cozy. I mean, it's the complete
anti-cozy.
Opposite. It is. It's complete opposite. You cannot get further away from a cozy than my book. So they really went out on a limb when they published this. So, you know, I got to give them credit for that. So, you know, it goes back to what you were saying, that publishers do need to, you know, take chances.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what. We got 60 seconds left, and I want to remind everybody here that your website is grantjerkins.com, JERKINS.com. So you can find out a lot of information from Grant. You can contact him. I'm sure he'd love to answer questions. Just to,
I would.
You know, and so read the book and everything else. But we're doing something here a little different that I want to try, and
okay,
you guys are actually my guinea pig, so we're going to see how this works. We're going to do 10 rapid-fire questions to you, and you just answer them right off the top of your head, so it's going to be real fast, just to kind of see, and they're fun, okay? They're just going to be fun to see what you said, okay? So you ready?
I'm ready.
So here we go.
Okay.
Would you rather live by the ocean or in the mountains?
Mountain.
Law and Order or CSI?
CSI.
Would you rather read on the e-book or a printed book?
E-book.
Oh, yeah, that's my man right there. Coke or Pepsi?
Coke.
Nice. Okay, would you rather have a best-selling book or your book made into a movie?
Best-selling book.
Vampires or zombies?
Zombies.
Do you prefer going to the movies or watching it on the DVD at home?
Going to the movies.
Now, Sherlock Holmes or Jessica Fletcher?
Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes, no Jessica Fletcher, huh? No love
no.
for Jessica. Who's basically Agatha Christie's character. So. All right. Stephen King or Dean Koontz?
Stephen King, are you insane?
Hey, there's a lot of people that think that some of Stephen King's work in the middle part of his stuff is kind of like, but Dean Koontz never really fell off the map, so you just never know. They're kind of both right there.
Stephen King.
So here's the last one. Ready?
Okay, yes.
James Bond or Indiana Jones?
James Bond.
Nice. Well, I'll tell you, that was fun. See, it wasn't that difficult.
It was not difficult at all. I thought you were going to ask me something. I'd make an ass out of myself. But no,
I'm the only one who makes an ass out of myself. So, but I'll tell you. So, everybody, Grant Jerkins, the author of A Very Simple Crime, just came out here from Penguin Berkeley. Look for it. I'm sure you're in all the bookstores, Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, and everything else. Correct?
Yes.
So, and that's Grant Jerkins, JERKINS.com. And Grant, it's been a pleasure, and you know, we will talk with you later. Keep us updated on what's going on.
Well, John, when you paused to take a sip from your cactus cooler, I knew you were the right interview.
That's what I got to do, cactus cooler.
Thank you, John.
All right, you have a good one. Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. So we're gonna parlay right here into our next author of the night, which is Regis Shilkin. Now, Regis, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine, John. How are you?
Fabulous. And we're going to talk about your book here, which is called You Know When. And what you have here on your site when you're just talking about it, you kind of say, is he an angel? Is he a mental telepath or a psychic? Does he know if you don't know when? What exactly does all that mean?
Well, to make a long story short, the book involves a character that you really don't find out completely about, of course, until the end. But it seems that there are a number of murders, or I should say, people have died, men who have battered their wives and have separated from them, but the women have gone and gotten restraining orders. And for some reason, the ones who continue to stalk their particular wife, even after this restraining order, why, they are the ones who seem to kind of be found dead. And the issue is the person or thing or whatever it is that goes about seeking whom he may devour, if I might put it like that.
Yeah.
You begin to wonder through the book as to whether this person is a real person, whether it is some kind of a phantasm, or just exactly who or what this person is.
So it's kind of a mystery wrapped up within the book, which is more like a suspense kind of thriller that you have going on.
Right.
Okay.
In fact, just to give you a little bit of flavor, do you mind?
No.
Okay, let me just play with your mind a minute. Imagine yourself coming home on a very cold day. Of course, you don't have cold days where you live.
I used to live in Minnesota.
Right,
so
now
I,
it's snowing.
I used to live in Minnesota, so I do know cold.
Anyway, here you are coming home. You are separated from your wife. You open the door to the living room, and the light does not come on. So you tiptoe across the room. You know it well. You reach around into the dining room to throw up the dining room light switch, and there's a hand on the switch in the dark. Now, how would you react to that?
Knowing me, I'd probably jump, say, "Who? What the hell was that?"
Yeah.
And literally, I mean, I would probably have goosebumps immediately just come over my body. I mean, it would just freak me out, especially when I came in and somebody knew I was there and didn't say, "Oh, it's me," and the lights are off. So I would definitely be freaking out.
Well, of course, the person, when he comes through the living room, he assumes that the light is out just because it burned out. You know how some lights flash and then they go off.
Correct.
But when he reaches around into the dining room, well, then what happens is that a handcuff goes around his wrist while he's got his hand trying to yank it away. And then another one hooks around his wrist when he grabs for that one. And within just a very few seconds, these handcuffed hands kind of get yanked up to the top of the door frame. And, of course, handcuffs are connected by chain links.
Right.
And when his hands are pulled up there in the dark, he can't see anything. And then all of a sudden he realizes that he can't move them, but his shoes and socks are being taken off. And a metal pan is being slid under his feet. Well, of course, you said before that you'd probably have a fit just touching the light switch. Well, then within a very few seconds, you know, this man starts begging for mercy. He has no idea who this is, and he can't see anyone. And, of course, someone or something ends up plugging in an electric cord, and the sparks dance around the chain coming down to his hands. And it takes a few minutes because, you know, just being human, it just takes a few minutes and the man is unconscious. And when the police find him, there are no real signs that anything happened because he's on the floor. The cuffs have been removed. The little hook in the door thing has been taken out. And what happens is they're not real sure what happened. It looks like either maybe he had a heart attack, maybe he bruised his wrist on something, and the story kind of goes from there as they try to figure out what happened to this man, because an autopsy shows that there really were no burns. It happened too quickly. When he was down and unconscious, this particular killer wrapped like saran wrap around his head to make sure that even if, you know, there was a chance that breathing would start, it didn't have a chance to happen. So the book goes on from that very first chapter, and as it develops, why there are some other incidences that occur like that. And that is what happens to these people who abuse their wives.
Well, I'm telling you, I mean, I'm just sitting here kind of speechless, but if my wife is listening, now she knows why I have to have the TV on at night when I go to sleep, and then she'll have it turned off once I'm asleep, because when I was growing up, I used to be home when I was alone, you know, like 12, 13 years old. My sister was off to college. My mom was probably, you know, working, and we lived in an apartment, and it was you know, we had a basement and upstairs, and I would be right in the downstairs, and I'd never go upstairs if it was dark, not happening, and I would never go near the basement door, which was near where the bathroom was. I would always peek around just to see if anybody was going to grab or whatever. I mean, so the picture that you painted, you know, I mean, I'm sitting here mesmerized because I'm actually listening to it just like it's a great audio book that, I mean, it sounds just, you know, absolutely fascinating. And yeah, not only would I be, you know, screaming and yelling and probably having a lot of F-bombs coming out of my mouth. Yeah, I would have no idea what to do.
Well, you know, I can imagine this, as I was writing the story, I could imagine this happening to this character, and I could imagine the language he would use initially, you know, thinking it was some kind of a big joke.
I guess
who
at the
knows?
Beginning, yeah.
And then, you know, as you find out that, hey, why are they taking my shoes and socks off? What's happening here? And at any rate,
I mean, where did that idea come? Where did the where did you have to put your mind into such a kind of a dark place to get the idea for a book like that?
Well, it wasn't in church.
Exactly. Well, I guess if the lights are off and no one's there, it could still freak you out because you hear a lot of stuff in church.
Well, you know, it's funny that you asked that question because I don't want to say the person at this point, but I'll just say, let's just make him a person for the heck of it. Person does not like the sight of blood and always dreams up very unique things like that so that when autopsies are done, they're rather inconclusive. So it kind of leads, you know, detectives and police astray until they finally start putting some other pieces together. But even then, I won't give it away, in the end, you're really not so sure. So that's why I put that question there. You really don't know if you don't know when, because there's a number of people involved in the story, not too many, but a number of women, and some of them have had good, they're more than glad that this has happened, and yet if this person is a killer, can you allow this to happen? I mean,
right.
Is this something morally you can do? And once you find out exactly what it is it something you want to let go? Or do you want to just leave it happen? You know.
Absolutely. Now, your book is available. I just want to let everybody know, you're at Amazon. Are you in bookstores and Borders and Barnes & Noble and places like that?
Well, initially... it was out here in Pittsburgh. It was in Barnes & Noble. I know it's on Amazon. It's on the Barnes & Noble websites. In fact, it's on most of the websites.
And it's called You Know When. And let me just tell everybody, your last name is spelled S-C-H-I-L-K-E-N. And your first name is Regis, R-E-G-I-S. So when people look it up, they'll know that they have the right book called You Know When. Okay, so go ahead.
No, I was just, trying to get some closure on what you had said before, that the story itself, Comfort Publishing, is the company that actually published it, and I had written some other stories. Those were stories that were self-published. This is the first book that actually was published. So a lot of people say that until you get a book published by, that you don't pay for, then you should consider yourself a writer and not an author. So that made me feel very good when Comfort picked this book up and agreed to publish it.
Absolutely. And, I'll tell you what, is that it's definitely one that people, because you're, this is why we're having the show tonight, because you're the type of author that, marketing is limited. I mean, you're not going to have a lot of marketing behind your publisher, and you have to do a lot of it on your own, which, is a very difficult thing to do. But it's definitely a book that, we want our readers to go out and pick up to find, to discover you. I mean, that's what we're here for. And by you explaining the book the way you did, if people don't go out and get this, then they're really not suspense thriller readers, just to tell you that.
Yeah, it's pretty much a suspenseful book.
Yeah.
It's not a real long book. And incidentally, when I was talking about Comfort Publishing, they have already contracted with me to publish two books.
There you go.
One will be this coming March, and I just sent in the approval for the cover for the other one, and it should be probably around the same time. So
fabulous.
It was nice, to all of a sudden to hit it lucky.
Fabulous. See, that's great. Well, I'll tell you what, we got about 60 seconds left, so you are now going to be in the rapid-fire seat. Are you ready?
Okay.
All right, so here we go. 10 questions. Gonna
sure.
Going to be different than the last ones because I didn't want you to think about it. So
okay.
Here we go. Romantic or comedy?
Romantic.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Morning writer or an evening writer?
Definitely evening.
A series or a standalone?
Standalones.
Anne Rice or Stephanie Meyer?
I'd go for Meyer.
Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings?
Lord of the Rings.
Los Angeles or New York?
I've never been to Los Angeles, so I'd probably have to say New York.
New York. iPad or a laptop?
iPad.
Ooh. So cooking dinner or eating out?
And this eating out.
Did not come from eHarmony. I made these all up on my own. And here's the final one. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Dogs. Well, I'm going to tell you what, Reed. That was, fabulous, fabulous information. Had a lot of fun. Your book, You Know When, is available Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble online, and everybody needs to go out and pick this up. I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. It has been a great pleasure to have you on. And please keep us up to date on your next one.
Will do. And thank you very, very much for having
me on.
All
bye-bye. Right. Thank you. Have a good night. So, everybody, again, that was Regis Shilkin with his book, You Know When. You definitely want to make sure that you check that out. And we are going to jump right in here now to our last and final guest of the evening, which is Derek Muck. Now, I maybe said that wrong, Derek. Is it Muke, M-U-K?
No, you got it right, John. It's Muck.
Muck. So Derek Muck here. And we're going to be talking about your book, which is a little on the, I guess you want to say, out there. Would you not say that?
Out there. I guess, well, I guess it depends on how you look at it. Yeah, I guess it's kind of like, yeah, deals with occult, paranormal topics.
Right. So, The Occult Files of Albert Taylor. Now, I guess the first question everybody's going to want to know, who is Albert Taylor?
Well, he's a fictitious character that I made up, and this book is a collection of short stories, 11 short stories featuring him, and it follows him as he investigates different subjects in the paranormal, supernatural field. And he's a college professor by day, and he investigates cases on the side. And, that's the premise of the book. And each case in the book is like a kind of like a mini case file from his investigations. But the character is not really based on anyone. It is a fictitious character.
Now, when you go ahead and you say fictitious, was it something, I guess you want to say, that was from a real person or totally made up off the cuff out of your head, Albert?
I would say it was pretty much totally made up, but, there are some qualities or characteristics about the character that are sort of based on my own, based on some of my experiences. I'd say it's pretty much made up.
Now, some of the 11 stories, because you include here, we're talking Bigfoot, UFOs, aliens, Jack the Ripper, the Boogeyman. Now, did you do a lot of research, like especially for someone, something like Bigfoot or Jack the Ripper? How much research did you have to do for this? Or are these kind of fictitious stories with more like a real life legend? Because Jack the Ripper would probably be the only one in your book that I guess that could be considered 100% real, whereas Bigfoot and some of the other ones are more, they could be more considered urban myths that could be real.
Right. I see what you're saying. John, for this book, for those different topics like Bigfoot, Jack the Ripper, and even I did do research for some of these stories. Like I consulted books from the library. I interviewed different people, and I also consulted various websites. But there was particularly like the story about Jack the Ripper. I did, go to the library, look up stuff, and watch documentaries about the infamous killer from the 1880s. So the stories regarding UFOs and aliens, I consulted books and videos on that. So you know, there was a certain amount of research involved, but it's not like sort of like really padded on that. I mean, there's not like all this you know, jargon, you know, vernacular that would make it like seem very technical. It actually kind of reads more. I'd say the book kind of reads fairly easily. It's just pretty much about kind of like a standard kind of investigative type detective story about this guy who, you know, investigates cases of the supernatural. Yeah, so, but there was some research involved. It wasn't like totally made about it, nothing, so.
Well, now, does Albert go ahead in the book, like Jack the Ripper or Bigfoot or any kind of UFOs? Do you kind of put in your spin on who you, you know, is Bigfoot real? Did they find him? You know, who was Jack the Ripper? Those types of things?
Yeah, well, it's pretty much like my own, you know, spin on the urban legend.
Okay.
Like, yeah, for instance, like Jack the Ripper, the story was basically, the premise was, what if Jack the Ripper was cloned and brought into, like, present-day San Francisco? And so that was the story behind that. And I kind of tried to make it unique and different and as original as I can because, you know, there's a plethora of stories like that out there. And same with the Sasquatch. So I try to make it unique and kind of give it my own twist. But it's not like sort of, it's not like a definitive solution to, you know, Jack the Ripper or like, is there really Sasquatch out there? It's kind of like, you know, kind of like my take on it in a fictional adventure.
And now I've been seeing from your bio, you've written for a ton of different kind of magazines. Now, were some of these stories in the book, including these magazines, or did you just have a lot of other short stories that you did? You know, is this kind of what your forte is, a lot of short stories, or are you working on like a full-length novel on a side of just like one topic?
I think my forte is short stories. I like the the brevity of the short story, the way. I feel like it's a good way to express how I feel, like, in a short amount of time. I think books are more complex to tackle, and they definitely take longer to write. But I've always liked the challenge of writing something short and, like, catchy. But, yeah, some of the stories were published in some of those magazines. In fact, on the credits page of the book, it tells you where the stories were originally published, and some of them were the magazines listed on my bio page. So, yeah, it's been fun writing for those different magazines. It's kind of a good way to get started in the business of writing.
And now, have you ever thought of, like, let's say that you're, and I don't know if this has come about, it sounds like you've just been doing a lot more short stories, but if you're doing a character here and you're writing a short story about, and all of a sudden a lot of authors, you know, say that their characters talk to them, and that character just doesn't want to die, just keeps calling to you, would you ever consider saying, all right, I'm going to use this and put together more of a full-length novel with them?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That, you know, I always try to, like, I always like to keep my options open and, you know, have as much possibilities as possible. And, yeah, I think the idea of a novel, I would never, you know, say no to that. I think that would be a great way to sort of flesh out the character and, you know, create story arcs and, you know, expand the character all that more.
Now, when did you kind of realize, and this came from the chat room, when did you kind of realize that writing was something that you really wanted to go ahead and start doing?
I think I started realizing that when, I first started writing in high school, and then later on, I would write on and off, and it wasn't until like I was in college that I started taking it more seriously, and I was published in like small press magazines and zines, and it was then that I really, you know, I felt like I found my calling, and mm-hmm. I thought it was a great way to express myself. I really liked the idea of, you know, creating imaginary worlds and writing about different topics, and it was then, I guess I was in my 20s, when I really thought, hey, this is really cool. I really enjoy writing, you know.
And now, and you're a social worker, you, and
yes.
That's kind of what you do by day, and then by night, you bring out Albert and his adventures in these books. Now, has social working and some of the things, I'm not sure, you know, what type of social working you do, but has it helped you with your writing and made you, I guess, evolve yourself into a better writer from when you started?
I think it has. I work with the elderly population, and I think, you know, particularly this kind of profession, you work with people a lot, and that's why I like the job, because, you know, I've always been a people person, and I think from all the experiences I've had, all the experiences I've garnered working so many different people, it's given me so many stories to tell. Like, you know, like, I'm a big fan of people watching. Sometimes when I take the subway to work or when I'm at work, I get ideas for characters from people I know or like from people I observe. And of course, I don't actually use these people in the stories. I'll change the names and I'll change the characteristics and qualities of who they are to make it a totally fictitious character. But I think my experience as a social worker and like even my previous jobs has sort of enriched my life, and, you know, giving me like a wealth of ideas to base stories on.
And you're saying like when you're on the subway and you're kind of looking and you see, so you'll kind of sit there, all of a sudden you'll see somebody and you're just like, maybe were you just like, are you just like wondering, you know, what that person is or who they are or, you know, what they could be, and then you just kind of revolve a story about like that?
Well, it could be like, yeah, it could be that, or it could be like the way they're dressed or like certain mannerisms, and yeah, you kind of wonder like, what's that person going through right now? It's kind of like a picture, you know, it's capturing the moment, you know, like you're wondering what's going on through their head, or it may be like the general attitude that the way they carry themselves that's kind of interesting or intriguing. And you know, like, you know how a photographer always carries a camera around to capture
right.
pictures? Well, I always carry, well, as a writer, you should always carry a notebook and a pen, and that's what I do. So, like, if I have a notebook and a pen on the subway, John, I'll just jot down character ideas and, like, qualities, characteristics they might have, and, you know, and might just kind of do, like, little character sketches in my pad, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, and then if you're a teenager, you always carry a cell phone.
Right, yeah. Well, now it's so much easier. You could just do, like, writing or character sketches on your iPad or your laptop or your iPhone or something.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, that's all we need now is to be able to sit around on a subway and see people, you know, looking at me and writing on their iPad, and I'll be like, what the hell are you looking at? Yeah, now, I have another question here that kind of came up, is that when you're writing a book and then you're writing for a magazine, what's the difference?
Well, when you're writing for a magazine, you got to keep in mind that magazines publish mostly short stories. They might publish like excerpts of books or like novellas or novelettes or like a series, but they mostly publish poetry or stories. So you got to write something that's short, like I'd say like around 5,000 to 6,000 words. Online, it's different. You know, a lot of online magazines, they can afford to publish more because they, you know, it's online. There's more space. Whereas in a printed magazine, you got to keep it short. You got to keep it like concise, economical, because there's only so much space in a printed page, in a printed magazine. So that's one thing to keep in mind when you're writing for a magazine. But when you're publishing a book or writing a book, you just have so much more space and time to flesh out your characters and create storylines and story arcs and stuff like that. So it's a totally different market. I think there's just more freedom and more, you know, you just have more room to work with when you're writing a book.
Well, I'll tell you what, Derek, it has been great having you on, but what we're going to do is you're now going to be sitting in the rapid fire chair for 10 quick questions.
Okay.
And you're going to give us your answers. Now, it's going to be different. I don't know if you heard the other two, but we're going to have some different questions than the other one. So, you know, we're going to see what you think.
Oh, John, before you get into that, can I give you my website address on where to get the book?
Yes, absolutely. Give it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, again, John, my book is called The Cult Files of Albert Taylor, and my website address is theoccultfilesofalberttaylor.wordpress.com, and you can purchase the book at that website. You can also buy it on Amazon.com. And
are you on Barnes & Noble and Borders, too?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm also on that. Yeah, so any questions,
yes.
You can email me through my website, too. So.
And Derek's last name is spelled M-U-K. So if you type in Derek and you type in Derek M-U-K, it will come up, and it's the Occult Files of Albert Taylor. .wordpress.com is the name of the website, and Derek Mark, M-U-K,
yes.
is his name. So are you ready now, Derek?
Yes.
Here we go. 10 questions, rapid fire. Number one.
Okay.
Horror or paranormal?
Ooh, horror.
Star Wars or Star Trek?
Ooh, Star Trek.
Writing on the computer or handwriting?
Writing on the computer.
Writing with music or writing quietly?
Writing with music.
Alex Cross or Stephanie Plum?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yep, Alex Cross.
Okay.
Or Stephanie Plum?
Alex Croft.
Automatic or stick shift?
Automatic.
And another one. Sports car or luxury car?
Sports car.
Would you rather read a hardcover or a paperback?
Paperback.
Beer or wine?
Beer.
And the last one, which I'm going to bring it back again because it's my favorite. Would you rather read an e-book or a printed book?
A printed book.
Really? So you're not quite into the 21st century yet. Okay.
Yeah. John, I still love the feel and the smell of a book. I love smelling the pages. You know, I'm still not quite into the Kindle yet, or the Nook, or whatever you call it.
I gotcha. All
right.
Well,
wait,
I'll
John,
tell you.
I gotta tell you, I love your rapid fire questions. I heard the ones you asked Regis, but I didn't hear the other ones. But I love kind of like the. You're right. It's kind of like speed dating, or like the kind of questions you ask.
It is.
Date, but
and
yeah,
I didn't even get these off of eHarmony. I made these up myself. I swear to God, I did. Yeah.
I love
it. Tell you, Derek, it's been a pleasure. Everybody, it's the Occult Files of Albert Taylor.wordpress.com. His name is Derek Muck. I suggest everyone goes out, look him up, buy the book, check it out. He's got some great stories in there. Derek, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, John, for having me on. Thank you so much.
All right. Again, everybody, that was our debut new author show we had tonight. First, we had on Grant Jerkins with A Very Simple Crime. We then had on Regis Shulkin that came on with You Know When. And now we just had on Derek Muck with The Occult Files of Albert Taylor. Three great authors that, you know, unfortunately, without publisher money being behind them all the way, very difficult to probably find them out. And one guy who does a lot of great stuff here is Scott Nicholson, and you can find him at hauntedcomputer.com. He just finished his 90-day blog tour. He is great with indie writers. He's definitely someone that you want to go check out, because if you haven't read Scott Nicholson's stuff, I don't know where the hell you've been, so you definitely want to make sure that you go out for hauntedcomputer.com and check out what Scott's been up to, because you just never know where it's going to be. DispenseMagazine.com. Check out our December issue for the best of 2010. A lot of great stuff there. We will see you all here coming up on December the 7th, where Brad Thor and C.S. Graham are going to be our guests online. So you definitely want to make sure you reach that. Go back and listen to Patricia Cornwell and Michelle Gagnon and check out their book. And everybody, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us here on this Friday night. We will see you again on Tuesday. Good night, everyone.